I do believe, you know, we've moved to Salesforce in the last few years. Having a good system, again, I don't think we're scratching the surface of the power of the product, and I'm not here chilling for them, but also having some real-time collaboration with marketing that is then supplemented by a system that promotes that. So person-to-person collaboration and then person-to-system collaboration. So having a system that's capable of executing on what you find out in the people-to-people collaboration.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode of Aligned, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Allen House to discuss some reasons why sales teams and marketers run into conflict and how you can better promote cooperation between the two. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to Aligned. I'm Sean Doyle, your host, and we are looking forward to a great episode today with Allen House. What is in this for you? Well, we are going to talk about how to drop the length of your sales cycle, increase your customer acquisition, lower those costs in doing so, and how are we going to do it? We're going to give you some ideas and insights from Allen's experience with sales and marketing alignment. You know, in the U.S. alone, LinkedIn says $1 trillion a year are lost because sales and marketing don't take the time to coordinate. And I'm going to wear that marketing hat. Allen is an SVP of sales type. In fact, he is. Is that your proper title, SVP?
Not quite, just regional sales director of the Southeast. There's five of us that cover the United States. But boy, you give me something to aspire to, SVP.
There you go. But your feet on the ground. So that's what we want to talk about. We want to chase this $1 trillion. Some part of your business is represented in that $1 trillion. It's going to be worth trying to figure out how to do this. So why is it worth spending time on this? The other LinkedIn data is that highly aligned organizations can typically improve their year-over-year growth in revenue, top-line revenue, by 32% by paying attention to this. And remarkably, companies with aligned sales and marketing functions generate over 200% more revenue from the marketing efforts. And I think that partially is just because some transparency and some visibility into what marketing's doing. So let's throw over to introduce Allen House, who's the sales director, one of five, and he covers the Southeast region at Jack Henry & Associates. For those of you who don't know, it's a fintech business. They provide the software and the engines that run your bank, is probably an easy way to say it. It's probably a grossly simplified story. And he's been there for 21 years. He's spent 30 years selling in the financial industry. And he is, although he made me promise not to talk about Auburn football, he is an Auburn fan and an alum. So welcome to Aligned, Allen. Sorry
it's
about the football
here.
Team.
That's all right. Good to be here, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Is it too early in the season to say there's always next year?
You spend your state in a perpetual, there's always next year as an Auburn fan. So just we're used to this. It's just no fun being in the ditch. We'll get out of it, but it's just no fun being in it for now.
Perfect. Perfect. The leads are weak, Allen. No, you're weak. You're weak.
That's
always be closing. Come on, Allen.
ABC.
Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross. Everybody loves the ABC quote. And I'd not noticed it until our famed producer, Alex Sherman, found me the whole quote. The leads are weak. You're weak. I love it. Like, that's just a great classic. Have you been in the bullpen? Tell me a good sales story that involves kind of this sales and marketing alignment. And, you know, marketers are used to hearing, hey, we show up, hey, there's 600 leads. And then you guys over in sales go, they're all garbage. Is that, talk about that.
Oh, man, how long did you say we had? No, I think this is a big struggle, specifically in our base, I'd say, is, you know, getting leads is easy. Getting qualified leads is the difficult part. Everybody can get leads. I'll give you a great example. We had our annual conference. We call it JH Connect. We met out in San Diego this year. Not a terrible place to have a conference, by the way. humidity is non-existent. And from being from the South, any place you can go, someplace that doesn't have humidity as a top three temperature factor is good. Anyway, we had about, I don't know, a couple thousand of our clients out there and some prospects. We invite prospects to our conference as well. And, you know, we have a technology showcase where we, you know, we have a square that's, you know, kind of dedicated to Jack Henry and Jack Henry products. We invite, you know, 100 plus other fintechs that both compete and collaborate with us. So it's kind of a co-opetition showcase, if you will. You know, we've always kind of felt that we're going to be the best partner for our customers. We've got to give them the best options for them. And sometimes that might not be a product from our suite, but they have the ability to talk to our folks. So to get to the lead portion is, you know, client A stops by the booth and talks to the product marketer or the person tasked with showing that particular product. And they take down the customer's, you know, contact info and register that lead. And then somewhere along the way that gets put into a database or Salesforce, and then boom, it gets pushed out to the sales rep responsible for that particular client. It's a lead, but when you read it and you're like, well, they already have that product, or they don't use, you know, whatever they're looking at, because the salesperson knows the entire organization. And I can't, again, I don't expect the product marketer in the showcase to know everything about the client. They're just basically answering questions, showing product, and then taking down information. But what happens is when that lead comes to the salesperson and it's not a qualified lead, either because they already have the product or that product doesn't fit their, you know, we have different cores, so it might not be a product that's available for the core that they run on. The salesperson has just spent, I don't know, however long chasing down that only to realize it's not a qualified lead. Wasted time, if you will. Now flip the script and you get somebody that, you know, let's just say they do need that product and we didn't know they needed that product, and then it comes down. Well, that definitely can generate, oh, this person was interested. I talked to my contact. They spoke to your head of loan ops. They need this widget. Let's talk about a demo. There is times where that matches up, but it can't just be conversation, database, salesperson. There's got to be some middle ground in there where, and again, this is the hard part, right? If it was a magic bullet, everybody would do it. But I think that's probably the frustration, is that when the leads aren't qualified, people spend a lot of cycles on stuff that may not be an absolute, you know, even a remote opportunity. So I talked for a while.
It's interesting. No, it's great. You said something interesting. There's got to be a middle ground. And I think one thing, if we want to really oversimplify sales and marketing and how we should cooperate, there should be different roles and responsibilities. And, you know, marketing has this ability to reach a broader group more quickly with broader messaging, right? That specificity, which is often something that I hear salespeople complain about what marketing's done, is because they're adding in this layer of specificity. I know this client, I know this prospect, I know what they need, and I know, you know, and marketing, you didn't get on that. Well, I mean, our job is to reach 10,000 people. Y'all's job is to close deals. Marketing should know how to help sales in that later stage section. I think sales needs to understand too, marketing's job is for us to bring you middle of the funnel. And that's where more overlap occurs or should occur, but often doesn't.
As data compliance laws become more stringent, many organizations will soon have non-compliant CRM data. Maybe you have insufficient first-party data, or you bought information from an improperly validated third party. However, you got it. Fixing it before the 2023 deadline should be a top priority. Fitzmartin's Wake the Dead program takes dead CRM prospects and applies a behavioral science model to re-engage them into your pipeline. In this process, you can reclaim old prospects or delete old ones, giving you a clean and compliant database with new opportunities from previously forgotten contacts. By retargeting with email and text automation, clients you might have considered dead or unresponsive will move forward and become potential prospects once again. For more information, check out the show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
So one interesting data from that research at LinkedIn that we started with was they see a 23% overlap between the target account list that I create to support you in sales and the list that Allen House has. And in the worst systems, you know, you see like sales has their own system. Maybe it's even their own spreadsheet, right? They're keeping it away from marketing, keeping it away from the company. You know, marketing's got this big system and data and yada, yada, yada. But sales is kind of patting us on the head and doing their own thing. But I thought that was a remarkable number, 23% overlap. How can marketing and sales come together and identify a target account list that's effective? Because if I promise you, marketing is a lever. If it's used well, I can make you more money, Alan. But if we've got to have an agreement on how to and who to talk to by title, by company, and marketing has advanced, especially with technology so far, I can now deliver advertising messaging specifically to specific companies. If you tell me we're starting an engagement right now where we're going to deliver messages to just a little bit over 1,000 registered investment advisors, and I can deliver them to the investment house, to the teams there in a geographic, demographic, sociographic methodology. I can even deliver it down to the by name, anybody with the URL. So it's incredible how we could do that for Jack Henry at the banking level. There's incredible technology, but we've got to have that tightly defined objective, that tightly defined that sales cares about. I think that's part of the marketers that mess up don't do what sales cares about. So how do we do that? What insider tips?
Collaboration, communication. I mean, I think, again, I'm a big believer in, again, there's a recognition that marketing and our marketing group does a great job. I mean, sales and marketing is one organization. It's run by one, you know, one person oversees both. But you have to be very deliberate about making sure that what, you know, marketing's executing on and what sales feels the gaps are or where the needs are align. And that is just blocking and tackling, collaboration. Yeah. And I think what happens sometimes is, you know, when there's a swing and a miss, when you feel like that marketing's not following what maybe is the best bang for the buck, you know, you can throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can just sort of say, well, I just do this better, you know, by identifying. So it's one step forward, two steps back. But when they are in lockstep, I totally agree with you. I mean, for the longest time, I mean, I've done probably hundreds of product webinars where you talk to a client, you say, let me show you my loan platform system or my deposit platform system. And so you spend an hour with their people on showing them your product. In the last probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, we've tried to do some due diligence calls ahead of time. Let's talk about what your needs are, right? Let's try to not just throw a webinar on you or a demo on you. Let's talk about where our product can help you. Because sometimes through the due diligence, you realize, man, this might not be a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. But boy, when those things align and you get in front of them and you say, look, let me show you how our system addresses your problem, a problem, your problem. And so to get to the sort of the, put a bow around this, our marketing group and inside sales, which is a really close arm of the marketing that helps our account reps on the, you know, talk to our existing customers is around business processes and functions, not product. Let's talk about efficiency. That might cross four products. So I'm going to talk about how we help your efficiency, not how we open a deposit account. Because there's three other systems that are involved in that account opening process that if we're just talking deposit account opening, we got to show them four systems and not talk about efficiency. So that makes
sense. That's brilliant.
I mean,
it makes 100% circling sense. Around. No, it's incredible. If there's a single lesson I'm going to take from today, it's that. And one reason we call our process centricity is we've got to quit thinking about what marketing thinks about and what sales thinks about, but it should be centered on the buyer. And that's what you talked about. Let's flip the conversation, right? Because if you called a prospect and said, I'd like to demo four systems for you today, what's the answer? No. I don't want to look at four
Hard
systems. but if you call this prospect and say, I know you've got this efficiency problem, would you be open to a conversation about how we've solved this for other people like you? Yeah. Okay. Great. And now through the course of that demo, you're showing them four systems, but it wasn't about the systems. We think right. about the systems. So I love it. I mean, I think marketing has got to listen to sales. From that point of view, sales should be coming to marketing and saying, hey, here's what my customer's worried about. This is the, and there's a couple of good models right now. There's a, Ian Altman has a sales model called same side selling. He calls them rants. At Fitzmartin, we call it the flip. You know, there's all kinds of different ways to say it, but it's take the time, ask your customer what they need. And yeah, our products and services have to solve them, but just don't voice it the way we voice it. I think that's the best, yeah. The best marketing. Well, let me say it the negative. The worst marketing is talking like marketing did it over in the marketing office with marketing talk and marketing lingo, right?
In the marketing bubble.
So marketing, and we might impress people by saying, hey, sales, what do you think about this? And sales pats you on the head and says, that's beautiful. But who cares? Who cares what marketing thinks? Who cares what sales thinks? Let's take the time to get the voice of the customer involved. And I would say that's a tip for any, we focus a lot on emerging middle market businesses. And those businesses are just now getting to the point where they need to start asking and listening to the customer. Doing a voice of the customer survey study from a third party is an incredibly valuable tool to flip the messaging. And then go change your website. Then go change your sales materials. Go change your outbound calls. Change your scripts. Change everything. Start using that voice. You got me excited now.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've been with Jack Henry, like you said, you know, 21 plus years. And at last count, we have 140 products, 140-ish. I mean, there's no way I'm going to say 140 and be right, but it's somewhere around there, right? So you got to, you know, our salespeople have to know a little bit, you know, a lot about some of them, but a little bit about all of them. And we've got specialists that cover. So again, to that, what I'm just mentioned, talking about functions and not products, we've taken 140 products and turned it into about, you know, 9 functions of the bank and 9 categories, I guess, you know, digital banking, right? Digital banking is going to incorporate a bucket of products. And right. And so all 140 fit into that. Instead of saying, let me send you my 58-page Christmas list of products that we can help,
yep,
you know, help your bank with. And don't even get me started on the naming conventions. We've finally gotten away from trying to name things where we refer to them as the product names. We'll try doing that with a customer that hasn't been your customer ever. They don't know
who
what
doesn't
you just
care.
Said.
And I just don't care.
What does your system do? It's document imaging. They understand that, right? It images documents. It processes items. It allows your customers to get their account balances online. They see it in functions. They don't see it in product names. They don't care about product names. They care about functionality. And then one thing I was going to say, and to your point, talking about marketing, doing marketing things, what marketing thinks is the best. Sales can be that way too. Sales can get in their own bubble and think we know how to do it best. But if it's working like it should, and marketing and sales are working together and collaborating, and this is ownership on both sides, and you give a salesperson a not just a qualified lead, but a, you know, again, play it all the way through, a lead that was, you know, vetted, let's call it qualified. That's a different, there's some different definitions of, and then that gives us enough information to have an initial conversation. And then that turns into a sale. You don't think that they're going to go back and want to do that over and over and over again. I mean, but what happens, like I said, it's a little bit of a short-term memory is you get a lead and you waste a lot of time on a lead that was either qualified or unqualified or not vetted well enough or whatever. You get a bad taste. The motivation killer for any salesperson is to have them do a lot of administrative work. You know, have them track, you know, have them have it key in everything, every conversation that they're having or whatever. I mean, we say good salespeople like to sell, and you can't just do it without a system, but you don't want them having to do a lot of legwork, research, administrative type work that kills their, you know, kills that sales spirit, if you will. So again, that opinion also might not be shared across the board, but it is with me.
No, that makes sense. And I think, you know, marketers should, and we would call this section sales enablement. And that's that middle of the funnel to the closing table, right? That's our point of view. We have a whole department called revenue operations, and that's what they do, is they live in sales enablement. And so you get that middle, that buyer that's starting to look forward at change. They want to buy your service, solve a problem, or your product to solve a problem. And they're just preparing, right? There's some things marketing can do. I love this playbook idea that the 9 categories, right? I mean, that then begins to shape how marketing can create content. So we can then get information you know, there's some incredible technology tools now that, hey, Alan, if I could provide you with, Alan, your prospect's been on our website and looked at playbook number three five times in the last 2 days, you might want a trigger, right? You might be a good time to call. Now, that's radically simplified. Business intelligence should come a lot of different points of view. And another really powerful way to use voice of the customer is asking people what they need, even a prospect, right? Most people think about voice of the customer and they limit it, probably because it's named voice of the customer, but they limit the work to the customer, right? When we do a voice of the customer program, we always interview three categories. That's the customer, of course, but we also interview prospects, because when we can interview prospects for a Jack Henry and we can say, hey, you know, we've been hired by a third-party firm. They're interested in proving the products and services in your space. What are your biggest needs? Where are the biggest gaps? Da, 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 da. And then we can bring that back to you. That's business intelligence for your development teams, for your sales teams, for your product teams. And then the other side of that is lost customers. When you lose a customer, how valuable would it be for a voice of the customer program for a third party to call that customer and say, we've been hired by a third party, by a company to do these calls in your space. They want to make it better. Your comments will be anonymous. We'll share what you said, but we're not going to say, hey, you just fired this person and we're calling to do something. We don't say that. They're not going to take that call, but we have an incredible, people are honored and interested in improving their own businesses. So when they get a call saying, we've been hired by a third party who wants to be anonymous, but they're interested in improving the products and services that help you, would you be willing to do that? And we're talking C-suite. I mean, it's not low-level people that are trying to kill an hour. It's incredible. So all three of those groups can really inform these playbooks. I think that's, y'all are doing, this is the reason y'all are so successful.
You know,
well, we've got to wrap up at some point.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're, you know, talking to customers that don't choose you, you can gather as much, if not more, information about your sales process and where it, I mean, you know, it's like an exit interview, if you will, like, or why didn't you choose us? And look, it's not like every day people are just dying to talk to somebody that they didn't choose. Let me talk to the people that I didn't choose and tell them why I didn't choose them. I mean, it's not top of list for a lot of C-suite guys, but on occasion, you know, you get one that decides that he does want you to know. And it could be a, you know, it could be a personality thing. It could be a process thing. It could be a product, you know, mismatch, you know, any number of things. But we have learned a ton about our process, what works, what doesn't work, where we, you know, beat the socks off our competition and where we lost the deal on. And that's kind of how we arrived at the due diligence. It wasn't rocket science. We didn't invent due diligence, but we realized how much of a difference it made to spend almost as much time with the customer before the demo, if they'll allow it, as you did during the demo. Because you can really hone in and get really surgical about how you're going to make their world different. I mean, you're talking about a heart transplant. And when a bank decides to change cores, that is a full heart transplant. And to make it worth it, two things. You have to have a divorceable offense from the prior incumbent, like they have to be at odds, or they have to be with an incumbent that cannot solve their existing business strategy or hasn't proven that they could. And if you get those two things together, then we're very successful. If you can get one of the two, we can be pretty successful. And then if you have neither of those, you don't have a divorceable offense and the other guy can do what you can do, it is literally a get to the know and let us move on to something that's a little more worth our while, if you will. So
yeah, not today, but someday. You don't run from them, you don't offend them, but
tip your hat,
not
say,
today.
Yeah, thanks for thanks for the opportunity, and we're here if things ever change.
Yeah.
We have won a lot of business walking out the door. So
powerful. Great insights from a senior leader. Now I got two questions to wrap up. First of all, what's the thing that's transformed your point of view around sales and marketing, maybe even in the last few years?
Oh man, we want to tackle world peace while we're on that subject. I do believe, you know, we've moved to Salesforce in the last few years. Having a good system, again, I don't think we're scratching the surface of the power of the product, and I'm not here chilling for them, but also having some real-time collaboration with marketing that is then supplemented by a system that promotes that. We are getting there. We're not there yet, but we're starting to see everybody working from one system. Everything's in one system, dashboards, so a salesperson can come in and see what their day looks like, how many leads they need to look at, what their opportunities are, you know, when those opportunities are set to close so they can major on the majors and minor on the minors. So that's kind of a real broad answer, but I would say person-to-person collaboration and then system, or maybe person-to-system collaboration. So having a system that's capable of executing on what you find out in the people-to-people collaboration. I just don't think you can ever get away from, again, it's like marketing due diligence. It's like what we talked about, doing it with a prospect. Have marketing due diligence with sales is super powerful. And when we have an execution plan or we have a gap that we've identified by being in the field, being able to go to marketing and say, here's the people that you need to send an email to, and just, you know, that's when those things work really well together. So
love it. You know, I think as you talk about the technology implementation, so many people implement a technology, and there's about 400 CRM kind of products out there, Salesforce, HubSpot. I mean, Adobe has a product, Marketo, and there's just a lot of them. We have an agnostic point of view when we work with clients, but what we've discovered is that most people implement the tool and then they abandon the tool because the usability is not there or there's not a lot of valuable data. So our revenue operations department, again, in the sales and marketing alignment mindset, goes in and finds out from sales what they want. And then we advise and build dashboards so that y'all get what you want. There can be 100 data points that you don't see that marketing can use. You guys need one or two or three triggers, typically. By you guys, I mean sales. So I think when you implement the technology, it's great. Most technology implementers are not necessarily sales and marketing people. They're good at technology implementation. So that's also a very soft pitch for Fitzmartin's RevOps department. But anyway, it really does matter. I mean, you've got usability. The number one reason we see failures in a CRM implementation or a marketing automation implementation, it's usability and user interface. Wrong information, information.
It's almost like we're the customer, right? Like we just talked about, they don't care that it's four systems. They just want to make sure it solves their problem. Salespeople are no different. They don't care what's behind under the covers. They don't care what CRM system, but if you're in a parking lot of a financial institution and on your phone, you can pull up the last conversations and the last interactions and what they have and what their market looks like or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that's a powerful tool. It doesn't matter if it's coming from three sources or four sources. Nobody cares.
Yeah. I was riding with a client salesperson, which is a fun thing for a marketer to do, by the way, because you learn a lot about how gutsy sales. So we did some drop-in cold calls. We did some things that I was very uncomfortable doing. it was really interesting to see what happened when that salesperson pulled up the app on their mobile phone before they walked in. I realized two or three things we could improve immediately by doing that, just by riding with sales. Know your customer. What problem are we trying to solve? What happens if we don't solve that problem? And what's the outcome if we do? What's the investment, the ROI? So, all right, closing question. Alan is an incredible musician. What's the dream guitar, Alan?
You know, a buddy of mine, just his grandfather had passed away, and his grandmother passed away, and they found an old hummingbird, mint hummingbird under the bed. Still had the tags on it. It's probably a 60s model, maybe late 50s, early 60s model hummingbird, mint condition. You know, he took it to a shop and he could probably get $8,000, $9,000 for it. But I think that maybe not his, I don't want to take his gem away from it, but I'd say a vintage hummingbird.
Well, if you hit play on this year, Alan, I think you should consider. Wow, I just turned into a sales director.
It took me 17 years to convince my wife to let me buy a Taylor without it costing me a dining room table and a couch. So
I'm not sure my wife knows how much my guitar cost. So that's okay. Oh, man. Alan, thank you for spending the time and coming on today. You had three or four just killer insights that I know will help people as they look at how to make their sales and marketing efforts more profitable and deliver more ROI. We would welcome you back, and we'll talk later. Thank you.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitsmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.